The History Show with Moz Duncan.
Good evening. On this week's programme...
Some say she was a hero, some say she wasn't.
Is Countess Markievicz an overrated icon of Irish history? Also...
Much of the muscle and brawn that today are exploited in international athletics as British products come from Ireland or from Irish men in America.
A call for volunteers to compete in the 1916 Olympic Games as Irishmen in their own right. And...
The emu may not be quite as recognisable as the kangaroo, but it does hold a special place in Australian history.
How hordes of marauding emus humiliated the Australian army in the 1930s. Plus, learning from history, could the Celtic Tiger property boom have been avoided? Constance Markievicz is remembered, amongst other things, as a revolutionary, a suffragette, and a tireless worker for the poor and dispossessed. We'll be discussing her legacy a little later, but for now, let's hear what these people had to say when Owen Sweeney asked them if they thought she warranted such pride of place in our history.
I think it's very important that she be recognised. I mean, she was a revolutionary in the broadest sense of the term at the time.
I think she might have been a bit overrated.
Her role in Irish politics and in British Isles politics, if one dare use that phrase for the time, should be marked.
Probably underrated, I think, yeah.
She probably is very overrated. Her contribution has been negligible, really, to Irish history. Her glamour is really what got her into headlines, you know, and the company she kept.
Possibly at that time there would be very, very few women anyway, so she would have stood out.
Well, she certainly had a part to play. But she was born from the gentry, the Protestant ascendancy in England. So she's kind of a blow-in.
Well, she goes down as an icon, I suppose. She's part of her history.
She made a mark.
So what do you think? Is she an overrated icon or an undervalued hero? Text us on 51551.
Why should our own land be robbed of the fame that is rightly theirs? Why should her vigorous sons, hardy today in body, if not in heart, bring pride and comfort to every shore but their own? Let the Irish volunteers prepare, not only for Clontarf in 1914, but for Berlin in 1916. From the ranks of these young men, if they will but bend their bodies to the task, might be drawn the finest athletic team in Christendom.
Rousing words there from Roger Casement in an article published in the first issue of the Irish Volunteer newspaper, which was launched 100 years ago this week. Casement was calling for volunteers to compete in the 1916 Olympic Games as Irishmen in their own right. The Games, which were planned for Berlin, of course, never took place. The Irish Volunteer, which was first printed on the 7th of February 1914, marked an important milestone in the history of radical newspapers and military movements in this country. Conor Mulva, lecturer in Irish history at UCD, and their man working on the decade of commemorations is here to tell me about its objectives and its impact. Conor, you're very welcome. Who was behind the Irish Volunteer and what was the aim of the newspaper?
It's an interesting story as to the setup of the Volunteer. There are early references to a Volunteer Gazette being circulated in the days after the Irish Volunteer, after the Irish Volunteer movement is set up on the 25th of November 1913. But that was only a one-issue paper, and we know that it was never planned to be serialised or brought out as a periodical. Instead, the Irish Volunteer newspaper was largely a commercial venture where members of the Enniscorthy Echo, particularly William Sears, went to the Irish Volunteer's provisional committee and said, "Would you like us to set up a paper to circulate to the Irish Volunteer?" They saw the growing numbers of the Irish Volunteers, and they realised there was a ready market here for a new newspaper buying public. And thus it started as a commercial venture with Lawrence de Lacy of the Enniscorthy Echo as their first editor.
So it was essentially a commercial venture. The Enniscorthy Echo had an eye to the main chance, as it were.
That's one of the... There's both a propaganda and also a training and communications value to the paper. But it does appear that it was based on a commercial decision to actually start the paper in the first place.
Lawrence de Lacy wasn't just a member of the staff of the Enniscorthy Echo, though, was he?
This is where the plot thickens. The Enniscorthy Echo absolutely brings commercial ideas into this, but in appointing the editor they appointed, the paper itself was already quite a politicised paper and had links with Sinn Féin going back to 1907 or 1908. But Lawrence de Lacy himself was also a member of the IRB. And this again shows us that infiltration of the IRB into the Irish Volunteers as a movement. And here we see them controlling the dissemination of news within the movement from its very inception.
And what is it used for? Is it used for simply, you know, as a bulletin board almost for the volunteers, or is there more to it than that?
You could say that it's almost like the hue and cry of the Irish Volunteers. So just as the RIC had their own internal newsletter, this is a paper that fuses light pieces with training material, with advice for volunteers, with advertisements targeted at the movement, and then with political invective and propaganda throughout the paper.
Now, political journalism becomes more difficult after August 1914. What happens?
The Defence of the Realm Act, brought in by the outbreak of the First World War, among other things, brings in censorship to a level that hadn't been seen anywhere within the British Empire, well, certainly within the British Isles up to that point. And in doing that, a large amount of the radical press within Ireland is suppressed and has to find innovative ways to get around this. So some of the papers that find themselves coming foul of the censor include the Irish Volunteer and, incidentally, the Enniscorthy Echo, which we've already mentioned.
Now, there were a number of anthems and poems, songs and poems in praise of the volunteer movement and in praise of Irish nationalism regularly seemed to find their way into the pages or onto the pages of the Irish Volunteer.
It would appear that the letterbox of the Irish Volunteer newspaper was flooded with everything from doggerel to somewhat interesting verse in its early phases, that people began to see this as, obviously, new movements need, they need song, they need some form of literary corpus that can, I suppose, build up the enthusiasm of their members. But members of the Irish Volunteers sent in their droves papers and poems about the Irish Volunteers. And in the very first issue, we have one by presumably a pseudonym of Brian Abanba that begins, "Hear it in the mountain, hear it in the glen, hear it in the cities, the tramp of marching men." And that goes on for seven odd verses after that. So we have all this, these poems coming in. But as people begin to pick up their own pens and write other verses emulating these, the Irish Volunteer has to put a notice on its front page after a few months saying, "Please stop writing poems and maybe think about the quality of your verse before you put a stamp on it and send it in."
There was something around this time called the mosquito press. Now, given the Irish climate, you wouldn't necessarily have associated this country with mosquitoes. What was the mosquito press?
The mosquito press is a phrase that comes about essentially in response to this censorship. These are papers that, like mosquitoes, spring up and then are quickly batted down, and a new one comes along and you have to bat that one away as well. So that's the etymology of the term. But the mosquito press very much became more prevalent after the start of the First World War with censorship. And not so much the Irish Volunteer, but other newspaper men, particularly Arthur Griffith, had a particularly innovative way to get around these sort of censorship and restrictions. And in the history of newspapers at the time, I find one of the most interesting papers is a paper called Scissors and Paste. This was a Griffithite paper, and what he did was he took articles from other newspapers that had already been passed by the censor and juxtaposed them in a way that could have been construed as seditious. So therefore, when the British authorities came to him, he could say, "Well, all the excerpts in my newspaper have already been passed by the censor," but they didn't quite see the same logic that he saw, and the paper was duly suppressed along with the rest of them.
Interesting way of trying to deal with the Defence of the Realm Act, though. As a couple of observations and questions on text. Am I right in thinking that the Irish Volunteer attracted all sorts of great writers of the time?
It certainly did. The first issue, which will actually be going online at the end of this week, which is the centenary of it on Century Ireland, the commemorations website, you'll see when that goes online that this is a veritable who's who of the Irish Revolution. In the very first issue, we have Owen McNeill, we have Tom Kettle, we have Roger Casement, we have Eamon Cant. And then interspersed with these are lesser figures to various extents. Liam Mellows even was writing for the paper in 1914, showing that these figures that would later crop up in the Republican movement were already active in print. So if Dublin Castle was looking for, let's say, a roundup list, the contributors, occasionally under pseudonyms, which is important to note again, that some of the ones who were most radical might have acted under these pseudonyms, and they're quite hard to get around.
Somebody else texts in to say, Dom texts in to say, William Sears was also IRB and had a son at Pierce's Skull Aina. In addition to the poems and the songs that we talked about, which the Irish Volunteer said, "Please no more," history was an important theme of elements of the newspaper.
Absolutely. Going back to the idea of the Irish Volunteers as a movement rather than this newspaper per se, the Irish Volunteers found themselves in a very unusual position. They were on the cusp of an independent Ireland. They were pledged to defend Home Rule. And as such, they saw themselves as a national army. In being a national army, they had to find precedents for that. So they looked to the more recent and also the more ancient past to find other Irish armies. So they found Brian Boru and the army that, in the view of the Irish Volunteers and Owen MacNeill, fought the Dane off Ireland at Clontarf. So that was one of the precedents. And the other was Henry Grattan's Volunteers in 1782. So by looking for these old Irish armies, along with Owen Roe O'Neill, people like this, by finding military heroes in the past, they were able to get, let's say, affirmation in the present.
The newspaper attracted some interesting advertisements.
It's a really nice part of all newspaper history, particularly in this period. I think in the early 20th century, newspaper advertisers are particularly innovative. They're particularly flowery in the way they do these. And some of the adverts we see in this are directly targeted at volunteers. So we have one for a clothing company that says, "Don't hesitate to shoot," straight to a clothing manufacturer's in order to buy your volunteer uniforms, etc., etc. Another one says, "Wanted 100,000 volunteers to go and buy Irish material with an Irish-made trademark on it." So we can see that fusion of nationalism, commerce, and then this new vogue for militarism fusing together in the Irish Volunteers advertisements.
The volunteer movement itself splits in September 4th, 1914 over Redmond's call for members of the volunteers to go wherever the firing line extends to enlist in the British Army. What happened to the Irish Volunteer newspaper at that point?
This is where I come back to that idea that this is, for the Enniscorthy Echo in any case, partially a commercial venture. Because at that point, Owen MacNeill's volunteers, which are the minority, they constitute roughly 7% of a force that is then 180,000 strong. They're the ones that the Irish Volunteer newspaper sides with. But it very quickly realises that the public aren't going to go behind this. So even though their politics are behind MacNeill, the money isn't following that trail. And the Enniscorthy Echo therefore pull their support for the paper. The paper goes dormant for a number of weeks and reappears in the winter of 1914 under the new titular editorship of Owen MacNeill himself.
And was he actually editing it, or was somebody else doing it?
If you had asked me that question 10 years ago, it would have been much more difficult to give you an answer. But because of the digitisation of the Bureau of Military History online, we have a vast resource at our fingertips that gives various different opinions on this. And one of the most valuable sources for the Irish Volunteer newspaper in the Bureau is the statements of Bulmer Hobson. And Bulmer Hobson quite clearly states that after the Volunteer newspaper went away from the Enniscorthy Echo and was produced in-house, let's say, Owen MacNeill was merely a titular editor, and Hobson claims that he himself did a lot of the editing and managing of the day-to-day running of the paper.
And it continues in this format until the 22nd of April 1916, so essentially a few days before the Easter Rising. And then to a certain extent it kind of re-emerges, but it re-emerges in Irish, or it re-emerges with an Irish title, and that's An Tógálach, which essentially means the same thing.
An Tógálach, the volunteer, exactly. And An Tógálach first comes out in the August of 1918 as an extremely important paper. It's quite different to the Irish Volunteer in some senses, in that it's much more firmly tied to the leadership and the organisation of the IRA, as it is by that point. It's also much more a training manual and a paper that's disseminated through official channels. So it goes to the company quartermasters and is disseminated through the IRA by those means. Whereas in the Irish Volunteer in 1914, 1915 and the early part of 1916, we have training material that discusses quite innocently rifles and ways of parading and first aid. By the time we get to An Tógálach, we have articles on the best propellants to be used for arson and how to create a roadblock or blow up a Crossley tender. So we can see that the paper has become distinctly more radical and, let's say, orientated towards guerrilla warfare.
An interesting question from Frank in Dublin. I'm not sure if you can handle this one, but it's a very interesting question. He asks, were Irish language publications censored during the First World War? Perhaps militant Gaelgors managed to get propaganda items published under the radar?
It's a very interesting question. I can partially answer it in that An Clive Sullis did receive some degree of censorship, but it also
that was the Conor Gaeilge newspaper.
This is the official organ of Conor Gaeilge, but that's a bilingual paper. Mm. Not so much in the sense that we'd understand bilingual.
Because An Tógálach is not bilingual. It's
no,
English
it's
language
not.
Newspaper.
Yeah, exactly. And the same with the Irish Volunteer. There's a certain amount of Irish language material throughout these, but it would appear that I don't know whether the censors actually got around this, but any English language material in An Clive Sullis certainly would have fallen under the eye of the censor.
Right, well, the Irish Volunteer was part of a very rare and important subset of Irish political newspapers from the revolutionary period. You'll find more details about it on our website, together with a link to Century Ireland, and that will have a digitised version of the first edition from the 7th of February 1914. We'll be hearing more from Conor on the programme in the coming months and years, as we'll be marking important centenaries along the way, the next one being the Curragh Mutiny, which is coming up in March. Conor, thank you very, very much indeed. After the break, is Countess Constance Markievicz an overrated icon of Irish history?